Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 354 for comics originally released on May 21st, 2014. Now, starting us off in DC is the long-awaited Forever Evil number 7.
Yay.
This is, what, 2 months late?
Something like that, at least.
At the end, after we talk about all the major books for the week, we may have a little discussion on, is it better to be on time or good, or, you know, the whole, do you want it good or do you want it now? I don't know about you, but this story had so completely lost story momentum for me. I felt the need to reread issues 1-6 of this.
Did you do that?
Yes, I did.
Wow.
This is also, as an event title, as a kind of arguably a turning point in the DC universe, has a few major things that happen here and there. So we may get a little more spoilery, both on this one and then later with certainly Invincible, than we normally do. So you've been warned. I had mixed feelings about this as I was reading both this issue and the series in general. One of the things that really jumped out at me is David Finch is a good artist, but not the greatest of storytellers. I mean, we talked about the first issue ages ago. Gosh, that would have been back in August. There were a few things, like where there was the helicopter crash and suddenly somebody who had been firmly inside the thing is now hanging from the tail rotor or whatever. And it's like, how did he get there? How did that happen? As I reread the miniseries here, I noticed a number of things of that sort. And it's a little hard for me to know how much of that is on the artist, how much of that is just some lack of continuity in the story. That's one of those where I think if I were to read the script, I'd have a little better idea or whatever. But those were just kind of unfortunate things. They weren't really a big deal. Ever since we talked about the end of Trinity War, I have really been looking forward to the Justice League versus the Crime Syndicate. And you know how last week we talked about how I was looking forward to the Avengers versus the Great Society, which is essentially the Justice League?
Yeah, but you're going to have to wait a little bit for it.
Yeah. There, I'm just going to have to wait. Here, I don't know that I'm ever going to get it. I thought we were shut up from the get-go with this series for just a huge slugfest between the JLA and their evil counterparts. We get some slugfests here, but, I mean, the Justice League was almost, they were a no-show in this event. And I was going to say, I guess I get it, but I kind of don't. You know, I read stuff like this. You go back to 52, Trinity, and some of the other stuff. It is almost like there is a mindset over at DC that some of their problems are their core characters. And I fundamentally disagree with that entirely. But it almost becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. The lead character and the hero of this story was Lex Luthor. I mean, we get his narration throughout a lot of it. I mean, the whole thing started with that. And for a Lex Luthor story, this was a really good one. I mean, I'm still unclear why they called it Forever Evil, but, you know, what did you think of this?
Although it was long overdue, and it took entirely too long to get here, I had fun with it. I really enjoyed it. You know, some of the stuff, the bizarro stuff, I really liked. I thought that was really, really strong part of it. I thought, of course, Luthor was really strong throughout. Some of the stuff with the Earth 3 Luthor, I thought was really cool, and those twists, I thought those were great. There was a lot of really good stuff in here, and not enough to completely make me forget about how long this took to get here. But I still enjoyed it a lot.
That's fair, and you're right. There were some good things, and again, Luthor, great Luthor story here. The use of Bizarro was a key aspect of that, and just fun in and of itself. It was an interesting twist on that character. You're right, the Earth 3 Luthor that we got here, a lot of fun. My hang-up a little on that was a lot of it was just there and completely unexplained. You know, they could have gone any direction with the guy, the captive of the crime syndicate. And up until the end of the sixth issue, that was just a non-issue in many respects. So there were a couple of places where I felt the story just kind of happened and didn't really seem explicable or set up well. But then a lot of what they did was really cool. I also found this to be a very interesting finale for the series, in so much as a ton happens in this issue. I mean, it's got the page count and it uses it fairly well. The story gets resolved. A lot of things are set up for future use. A new status quo for the Justice League, a new status quo for Grayson, Dick Grayson, Nightwing is kind of hinted at but not revealed. And same with the Justice League. It's kind of set up but not established. That happened this week in the Justice League title, though. But there were also a lot of things that were just kind of open threads at the end. Like many event titles, you hit a point where you got the resolution followed by epilogue after epilogue after epilogue after epilogue of just, well, this is where these characters are and this is where these characters are going next or whatever. I'm looking forward to the new dynamic, particularly for the Justice League. But then, you know, for Justice League America/United, we've already read two issues of Justice League United, so that whole thing didn't pan out well. That was one in hindsight. I should have waited on those until after this came out. It didn't really impact my reading of this, but it did impact my thoughts on the final issue of Justice League of America.
Okay. And now there's an aftermath that came out a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I read that one. Batman vs. Bane. Completely okay. Skippable.
Okay. Okay. Not something you need to read then. Okay. I think I might have mentioned it before, but I think this would have really benefited from an accelerated schedule, you know, have this unfold over 2 months, weave the other Forever Evil minis in between those issues along with the Justice League tie-ins, and it would have been a real fast, momentum would have been there, and I think this would have worked so much better. Just this seven-month event, it really, or eight, or nine.
Seven issue, again, it started back in August.
Yeah, so that's way too long, and that's the problem. And you know, comics come out every month, so you got to do that. But
monthly comics are supposed to come out every month. A lot of comics like this don't.
Yes,
and it held up other stuff.
It did, and it held up a lot of stuff that, you know, I haven't read all the Justice Leagues. I'm a couple behind because I got confused about what order things were in. So I'm a couple of Justice Leagues behind, and I'm behind in some other things because I just didn't want to read it out of order, and, you know, that's on DC, that's not on me.
Entirely, and I was in the same boat. I've been holding off on, what else did I read after this? I read the Aftermath, Bane versus Batman, Justice League of America, and the two issues of Trinity of Sin, Pandora, and I still have the entire Superman Doomed and Prelude and all that, so I've got another half dozen issues are sitting here waiting to be read. And you're right, that's totally on DC. And if they don't care about the reading order, and again, putting out two issues of a replacement title before the title it replaces actually ends, come on, that's just not right.
Yeah, but on this issue, I really love the way it came full circle with some of the stuff from issue one. I thought that was great. Mm-hmm. Nice touch. You know, I liked the way it ended, and I liked the way we got there, and the stuff that we got in this issue was really fun, and I, you know, I did, you know, unfortunately we had to wait, but all in all, it was a really good issue, so I gave it 4.
I can see that. I think a lot of my complaints were more around expectations and, you know, who I thought could have been in this, you know, like the Justice League and stuff. By and large, what we got on the page, other than it took a while to get those pages, really well done. Again, this is probably one of the best Lex Luthor stories set in the DC Universe proper I've read in ages, if ever. So I thought that was really well done. The stuff that this, I mean, they walked the line of giving this closure, yet setting up the next major event and leaving a couple of very tantalizing story possibilities out there. So I would have liked to have been sooner. I would have liked to have had a few other things in this. Again, what I thought was going to happen based on Trinity War didn't, but I mean, they never technically promised that either. This was a 4 out of 5, I think, with a couple of tweaks here and there. It could have been higher than that. I also think, though, if I had not read issues 1 through 6 right before reading this, I would not have enjoyed this as much, and it might have knocked the score down a full peg for me. Because before going into this, I was trying to remember where things left off. And I remembered the immediate end of the previous issue and a couple of things here and there, but I'd kind of forgotten how much I'd forgotten.
I had an advantage because I don't read things as quickly as you do if we're not reviewing them. Mm-hmm. I let things stack up sometimes. So I read Forever Evil 6 not that long ago. So that helped me a little bit.
Yeah, for me, it had been 2 months. And the fact that this is kind of disconnected from a lot of what else is going on in the DC Universe right now makes it that much harder to seem relevant. We'll see where they go with the next major event. What they tease at the end of this has me very excited. It may be better part of a year, though, before that sees fruition.
We assume that they're going to hold off on any events until after these weeklies all tie up in March, right?
My expectation is those tie off into the next major event.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
So, should be fun. Should be fun.
Well, we'll have to wait until then for Multiversity?
No, I'm certain we won't.
Yeah, we'll get that before
that. Comes out in August. It's in the June solicits.
Oh, is it? That's great. Great. I didn't get my previews yet. So.
I even post the links to these solicits for the major publishers on the forum, Drew.
I don't like to spoil them.
That's fair.
I like to look in the book. I have to pay big bucks.
You don't
want to
spoil the previews.
Right.
You don't mind spoiling, Walking Dead like you did last week. Very interesting.
Well, no need to call me out. That's kind of hurtful.
Yeah. Hey, it's just as much my fault as anyone else's. These things happen. But not wanting to spoil the solicits, that's a new one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a nice... You crack open that book and, because otherwise it's really not worth owning. You really only use it for a little while. And it's definitely not worth $4.50.
It's overpriced. I'll grant you that.
It's well overpriced. So, I like to get the value out of it. And if I've seen all the solicits, then
For me, it's the art and just seeing what kind of pops as I flip through it. But I know what you mean. They need to shift the business model on that one. Make it almost free.
Yeah.
Shall we move on to Marvel?
Yeah.
This is Magneto number 4. This is one that you've been very excited about this title, haven't you?
I've enjoyed it a lot, yeah.
So, what'd you think of this issue?
I thought it was good. I don't think it was the strongest of the first four, but I thought it was a really good issue, and it continues the one-and-done nature of the storytelling that it's taken so far. A nice self-contained story, but continuing the thread that began in issue one. Mm-hmm. So I like that a lot.
Interesting. I'm gonna say that in some respects, I completely and fundamentally disagree with you.
Okay.
And I think you're going to be hopefully a little surprised in the way I disagree. I actually think this was the best issue of the series so far. Because the entire thing, I've been reading the series, I've been liking it, but not loving it. And the more I thought about it, particularly after reading this, is I think the problem I had with the series is I wasn't understanding why Magneto was doing what he was doing. What was his motivation for kind of this aggressive protection of the weaker mutants? This issue totally sold me on why he does what he does, why he does it the way he does it. And it's funny because I think some of what I really enjoyed about this, I got more out of this issue than I think what was literally on the comic book page here because of what I know about Magneto's backstory. Now, how up are you on his backstory?
What they've shared via the movies and these four issues.
Okay, so not that much. but enough, I think. So he grew up in World War II Germany.
Right.
In the concentration camps and all that stuff.
Yes.
This had some wonderful echoes illustrating how mutants are treated in the current Marvel Universe as like the subhuman entities for experimentation. They can be killed. They're in many people's minds, literally not human. And while there's not that central, lead figure of Hitler like there was in Nazi Germany, the parallels here are clear, and it casts his actions in a really bizarrely heroic light when seen from that particular perspective. He lived through certain atrocities, and he will not let those stand. He is seeing them happen on a regular basis, a daily basis. Nobody's doing anything about it. He has the power, so he will. And, I love it because they're turning him, I don't want to say turning him, they're treating him as a hero without really redeeming him. I mean, he's so far from a clean-cut superhero kind of a thing. He's still Magneto. He is still, not someone you want to mess with in any way, shape, or form. Many of these people will no longer be a problem. And being able to keep him very much the Magneto we've known, yet completely, you know, turn my perspective on the series and the character. This issue really impressed me with that. Because a lot of what happened here was kind of subtle in the way they showed his motivation and such. Nazi Germany is never mentioned here. Concentration camps are never mentioned. If you don't know any of that aspect of his history, it could be those parallels could be lost on somebody.
Well, I mean, I believe they reference it pretty heavily in issue 2 or 3.
Yeah, this is issue 4 we're talking about.
Yeah. So, but, I mean, yeah, the groundwork is laid for that.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. And I love the names, the way the names just go on and on. And it's very reminiscent of the Vietnam Wall.
Mm-hmm.
Memorial. Some really cool touches like that.
It was a good way to, like I said, reorient somebody's take on the character, and that's exactly what it did for me. You know, the story, the plot, and stuff like that itself here was frankly 4 out of 5. There were aspects of it that were a little pedestrian. It was not totally brilliant, whatever. But because of the way it really illustrated his character and you know, how from that particular vantage point, which is an incredibly valid one that I just hadn't seen, it really, you know, gave some very cool and powerful insights into the character. For me, that's enough to give this a 5 out of 5. They took what could have been just another issue and to me completely justified this take on Magneto.
Great. That's awesome. I liked it. I liked it a lot. It's a high 4 for me, not quite the 5. I think the issue, I'm comparing it to itself, mm-hmm. and the issue that I referenced that did kind of show some of his younger days in Nazi Germany, that was kind of my favorite. And would have been more of a 5 for me, but this one was really strong and agree. I cannot disagree with you giving it a 5, and I'm glad you liked it as much as I've liked this series. I think it's super solid, man.
There is something about the way they've drawn the character that has made him look not Magneto-like in some respects in previous issues in here.
Yeah.
That as I was opening the issue, I was thinking this is almost like if you were to take, I don't know, the actor Clancy Brown and say, okay, he's Magneto now, you know, it works. It's a good take. It just felt different. And again, the way they merged it into my take on or my experiences with the characters, past and stuff like that. Fun stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is.
Shall we move on to our other book of the week?
Invincible 111.
Yeah. Now this one, I think we're going to probably get a lot more spoilery than usual because this is the first issue in a bold new direction. The first issue of a startling new era. The first issue for a new generation. And, And it's written by Robert Kirkman. He writes The Walking Dead. Did you know he was going to write this?
That's exciting. It's exciting stuff.
It is overhyped.
I think
it's safe to say.
Yes.
Kirkman does that. This, how long have you been reading Invincible?
I read the first trade. Period.
Really?
Yeah.
You need to read the second trade.
Okay.
This issue harkens back to the early days of the title when it seemed like anything could and did happen. Specifically, the events of that second trade. And then, like now, this had some stuff not for the squeamish. And hello, I'm squeamish. There were parts of this issue that were incredibly violent and incredibly gory. The violence was a key part of the story. It could have been done off-panel, might have even been more effective that way, but it had to kind of be in the issue for the issue to have been what it was.
Well, this is gory on John's scale of gory. If anybody reads Avatar books or some of the other books and
a
revival
not
regularly,
it's the goriest comic out there.
This isn't gory at all compared to those.
Compared to your average issue of the title, though?
Okay, maybe.
There were a couple of things where, you know, there's dismemberment, there's, you know, body parts getting squished and stomped on and crap like that. And again, a lot of people, it won't phase at all. It's just a bit of a hot button issue for me, I admit that.
And they do give full disclosure on the cover. There's a lot of gore on the cover, a lot of blood flying around, so you kind of get a sense for what you're going to get.
I guess I differentiate blood flying around from gore. What happens with a couple of the characters that are clearly exiting the book at this point. you know, and again, I'm not saying he overstepped. I'm saying there was a lack of subtlety. There was not particularly need for subtlety either, though. And this was a case where the artist kind of being good at what he does didn't really help the issue for me. But that's me. There are other people who are going to love this, particularly like the Avatar readership for that publisher. I'm sure, I hope there's nobody out there thinking, Avatar the Last Airbender? How is that going? No, Avatar the publisher.
Avatar Press. Sorry.
Yes, Avatar Press. That would just be an odd thing to have somebody really get confused. This is one of those things, though, where Kirkman is just about being, I mean, blatantly cruel to the characters in order to get a rise out of the audience. And this is something that he's, frankly, very good at doing. Oh, well, they're not going to see this coming, and then wham, you know. This is a clear turning point for the character. There is no two ways about it. If somebody were to try to get me on the book and I hadn't read it before and they said, I'll start with this, and I had no connection to the characters, no history with the title or anything, I would not continue based on this. But again, it's hitting hot button issues for me with the gore and stuff like that.
Funny you should say that. I haven't read this for a long, long time. So I was treating this as a jumping on point, perfect for new readers, as it says on the cover. And in that, it failed for me. It was okay. Mm-hmm. And I did not get drawn into this this world as you would with Robert Kirkman's Walking Dead. It's not the same immersion. I don't feel it. I don't feel the same connection to the characters. And
where did you start with the Walking Dead?
First trade. And
okay, just, fair enough.
You know, powered through them.
I think if you were to reread the first trade, go on to the second, you would see some of the, I don't say the parallels, but some of how this is almost a back-to-basics approach for the character in the title. Mm-hmm. But I think the difference between this title and Walking Dead is Walking Dead has had a very strong, clear narrative path the entire time with no real dips in quality. I mean, there are a few places I didn't get as engaged as others. I think after the Governor storyline in particular, it kind of meandered a little, but it was still good. Here, with Invincible, there have been a couple of cases where it's anything can happen, and there are others where it's just we're telling another standard superhero story. I think this is his second-tier book by a wide margin in terms of quality, how much he puts into it, that kind of stuff. In terms of creative energies or whatever, I think he really gives his all to The Walking Dead. I wouldn't expect you to get hooked on this because I don't think there's any context in this issue for you to care about any of the characters that unfortunate things happen to.
Yeah, yeah. There's a five-page prequel or preview pages of Outcast, which is Kirkman's new book that's launching. And those five pages made me care about that character and the characters a lot. And made me very intrigued. Maybe it was only four pages.
Yeah, it was four.
It made me intrigued for this title a lot better than the full 111 did. So, interesting.
That's interesting because I had seen those preview pages before and I found them intriguing. But I'll be honest, a horror title, you know, blatantly horror title by Kirkman is not something I'm particularly in the market for. I'm going to try the first issue. I'll sample it, but I haven't ordered any after that for Outcast.
Mm-hmm.
With Invincible, though, I think the next few issues should be pretty eventful, just, you know, picking up on the heels of what's going on here. But I question if this is going to really re-energize the title, re-engage the audience, or not. Or if it's just going to be a big, you know, to-do for the equivalent of a trade paperback arc, and then it's back to, okay, plain old kind of a thing. They've swept other things under the rug, so to speak, in the title before, that you would think, oh, nobody could possibly forget this, that, or the other. It's a comic book. You could toast the entire world. It's post-apocalyptic for a few months, and then everyone's back at their day job after that, you know? This, I don't know, it wasn't bad, but it seemed to be so much in terms of, like, a shock and awe campaign against the audience.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very shocking in places, and probably to grab, maybe that would grab some new readers. Doesn't do it for me. It wasn't that extreme in my mind, but I could see how other people could be turned off for sure. And there's a lot of action in here, so if you like action, it's full of it. For me, it was just an average comic, so it's a 3.
I can see that. That's where I landed too. I considered giving it the 4, but the more I thought about it, it's just, you know, I can't. There are a few things that, again, specifically did not work for me, but that's, again, me and my hang-ups on some of the gore and stuff. And it seemed like some of this and what happened in an issue or two previous just came so out of the blue. It was not an organic part of the story that, you know, I'm disappointed by that. You know, Kirkman's a great writer. He's done some great stuff on this title. He's done most of his best work, I think, obviously, on Walking Dead. But we'll see what happens with this title. I don't think it lived up to the, you know, three relaunches in one kind of a deal.
No, it was definitely overhyped. You're right, yeah.
Well, it's the kind of thing. He could have started with something really big happening about a third of the way through or whatever. Something else completely blindsides the lead character, and boom, it's now off in a total another direction. Because, well, that first thing, it seemed big, but after this, whoa, you know, and then do that again. That's tough to do, and frankly, he didn't pull that off. So, but I'm curious to see what kind of spike that issue gets in sales and what kind of the general consensus is once people have kind of weighed in.
Yeah, I think folks that are fans of this and invested in these characters, this might resonate more with them than it did with me.
Been reading it since it began, and that's part of what turned me off is pointless brutality against lead characters for the sake of a sales bump. It just seemed cruel and contrived.
I'll be interested to see what the hype machine did for sales of this book, and then what it does the following month.
Well, and I think the big thing is where the next arc goes. Is this something that lasts, you know, four or five issues just to play this out? And then is it still anything can happen or is it not? So, but yeah, I agree with you entirely. What did the hype machine do for sales and how long does that last?
Yeah.
This was a huge week for me in terms of comics. I think this is the biggest I've had. It was at least a comic or two bigger than the previous one I had that was huge. I got like 66 or so, 65, 66 comics or something. Plus, I had the backlog of the things I mentioned I was holding off on because of Forever Evil.
That's
plus,
almost 10 a day, John.
It is. It is. Well, and again, the other six issues of Forever Evil. It was a lot to be reading. I'm glad it was a three-day weekend. I would not have made it otherwise. And I still, like I said, have the Superman Doomed stuff to read. But, you know, the delays on Forever Evil really do bring up the question of, you know, does it matter if it's late or not? Or, you know, is there some good enough standard to be had or something? And I don't know. I'm glad they finished the series with the same creative team they started with. But 2 month delay plus other books kind of knocked off schedule and whatnot, that just sucks.
Yeah.
They should have had their act together better than that.
And it's unfortunate because issue one had fantastic sales. And I'm not sure how it's been a while since there's been an issue out, but I think it's been kind of decreasing and falling off. So
it's
decreased too bad.
Quite a bit with issues, I think, 5 and 6 kind of having leveled off. But it was below the 100,000 mark by, actually, it was only around 92,000 for the last two issues. But Forever Evil felt disconnected from the main thrust of the universe, which for a crossover event series is kind of bizarre. We'll see what happens with Future's End and all that stuff.
Yeah. You think we'll see Earth 3 again?
I hope so.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. Those characters were cool.
I've always loved the Crime Syndicate, and I would be game for a mini-series that kind of was a prequel to Forever Evil from their point of view. How their team formed, who the other characters were, what happened with you know, those people and stuff like that. What led up to them coming over to the main world?
I think you could get a year out of it easy because you could spend some time with each of the characters and a little more of their origins. We got some of it in Forever Evil, but you could get more. Those were fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought those were some great issues of the Justice League. But I think that was part of also why I was disappointed that, I mean, they haven't really, Justice League hasn't been in their own book. They weren't in what I was expecting them to be in last week over in the Marvel Universe. They didn't show up here to go save the day in Forever Evil number 7. It's like, I want to see the Justice League be the Justice League, or at least somebody be the Justice League. Even if it's over at Marvel, I'll take that.
And you've read the most recent Justice League and still know nothing?
It's a repositioning issue.
Ew.
They're there, but it's what's the aftermath of Forever Evil. It's really setting up their new status quo. And I highly recommend it. I think this is going to be a very interesting duration for the team and the title. Again, what they're doing with Lex Luthor is fascinating. Where that issue left off was great. And Forever Evil clearly set the stage for that. They could not do a lot of this, or at least it would play very differently, had they not done Forever Evil and had that arc for Lex.
Well, I know from my brother, Black Manta was the breakout character for the Forever Evil series, even though it was really Lex Luthor's book. But he really kind of discovered that character, and he's chomping at the bit for more Black Manta.
I would recommend then for your brother, if he has not already done so, watch the Young Justice TV series.
Oh, okay.
One, it's a terrific series. It lasted 2 seasons, and he plays a fairly sizable role, particularly in the second season.
That's but cool.
Having reread the 7 issues of Forever Evil, if you're not unfamiliar with the character, yeah, it's a decent introduction, but he's not really a lead character by any stretch of the imagination. He's a utility player. He's filling out the team. I mean, to me, he was on par with Sinestro as just, you know, we need some people with some muscle to go do some fights while we focus more on Lex, Captain Cold, Bizarro.
Yeah, Bizarro was great, too. Yeah. Bizarro was a great character in this series.
Again, it was really well done. It's just unfortunate there were delays. I think you hit the nail on the head. If they had done it in rapid succession, treated it kind of like they did Flashpoint with everything's kind of grinding to a halt, this is the event, it goes for, you know, a couple of weeks, whatever, boom, let's move on. And if it had been a fast and furious, you know, Trinity War ends, the crime syndicate is here, everything goes kind of askew for a month, boom, now we're back and picking up the pieces. Do some of those as double or triple size issues on a weekly basis. Man, that would have been fun.
Oh, it would have been fun, yeah.
But they didn't. They should have listened to you. Why didn't they?
They're not answering my calls. I don't understand it.
I don't get it. One thing I alluded to earlier, I'll go ahead and mention it now. I'd gotten a private message on the forum from Brad, a.k.a. the Captain, pointing out that we had spoiled aspects of Walking Dead 127 last week.
And he's using we, the collective we, when it was really me.
Ah,
I spoiled it.
It happens. I apologize for that, but, you know, I personally hate spoilers because I want to read the story as the creative team intended it to be. And even if somebody just says, oh, well, this happens, it's not a big deal. You go in with certain baggage and expectations, and that baggage and expectations colors your perception of the story. And you only have one shot to read something for the first time, barring amnesia, time travel, or something of that sort, I guess. So I've done a couple of things to kind of set up the Comic Book Page podcast to kind of minimize spoilers like that. I mean, we focus on a particular release week every weekly comic spotlights. You know, well, if it was released in this case, May 21st, 2014 shipment, that's what we're talking about here. Nothing after that. So there's a certain safety factor there. Episodes come out 12 days after the comics, but still, if you're getting your comics monthly from DCBS, or if you're just behind, and believe me, with the size stack I get, I get how that can happen very easily. That isn't enough. So, for the featured items, again, we announced those a week in advance, what we're going to be talking about, so that's... We may get more spoilery some weeks than others on those, but I mean, hey, we've given you a week's warning at least what we're going to talk about there. It's really the stuff here at the end, where we're just talking about what else we've read. And it's easy to get very excited about some of the comics and what we're talking about and let some spoilers loose. So, I mean...
And it felt like the world knew about the... Spoiler, about the 2-year jump. I felt like the world already knew that, but I was wrong.
That's one of those things where when does a spoiler cease to be a spoiler? And, you know, with some stuff, I mean, it literally hits headline news sometimes. You know, so-and-so in the comics have died or whatever. It's, you know, I used to work with somebody who would start conversations with spoilers. I can't believe they killed so-and-so. I can't believe they did this. And I'm like, what are you talking about? It's Wednesday morning. The books are coming out. I haven't gone to the comic shop. This was, you know, So I get the frustration there and stuff, and how hard it can be to avoid spoilers. But there's also a point where it does seem like everybody already knows. Either it's in the solicit, it's been on the news, or whatever. So again, I apologize, but there's also a certain amount of it is going to happen. You know, I want this podcast to encourage people to read comics, not for them to feel like they've already read the comics we've talked about. And there are some other podcasts out there, a few of which I think do an amazing job. They can practically replace the reading experience for somebody. And they do it to an incredible depth and whatnot. That's just not what I'm setting out to do here. But again, it did happen. Again, I apologize, but it'll probably happen again. So, oops.
Not from this cat.
Well, again, you know, sometimes it's hard to talk about a comic without talking about the comic, you know? So, what else did you read that was of
amazing? Song is back, and I can't believe that.
Yeah. I will say, on that one, I couldn't believe the first page.
Yeah. welcome back.
that was needlessly gratuitous in my mind.
Yeah.
But they're going to do what they're going to do, and they're telling an interesting story.
Yeah, I think you made the point, maybe on your trades Mayo report, about would Saga work as a PG book instead of its R, that it is mature themes that it is? Would it work as well? And I think your opinion was no, it probably wouldn't. And it needs this mature themes to work as well and resonate with folks as well.
Was not my take on it.
No, that was my opinion. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, that was certainly not mine.
I get us confused sometimes.
Really? How odd. I'm the voice from outside your head.
Oh, yeah.
I think it would be obviously a little bit different of a story without some of the stuff they've got in it to make it more of a PG thing, but I don't know that it would fundamentally like neuter it or change it or take the core of what it is out of it. And I do think there are some cases where you kind of got to leave in what it's got for it to be what it is.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to think of what would be a really good example of that. Well, I mean, it goes back to the old joke, you know, they've rebooted Batman this time his parents are alive. That kind of undercuts the whole point of the character's motivation, you know?
Yeah.
That just doesn't quite work.
But Saga is back from hiatus, and this was the longest hiatus. This was more than just the planned month off while the trade comes out. So it felt like a long time. But they planned it and told us and warned us. So we did have that, but I'm glad it's back. I didn't feel like I had missed much. It's a big jump and an exciting jump, and I encourage you to read it.
I like how they plan the pauses in that series for them to you know, I don't want to say get back on schedule, that's not right, but to maintain their schedule. You know, I think that's a very smart move for them to do versus just continuing to solicit stuff like some other titles have done in the past.
I mean, that's what it takes for Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples to keep it fresh, keep excited, and keep this book going, because they want to keep it going for hundreds of issues. That's great. I applaud that. On the other hand, Robert Kirkman does that, doesn't take any time off. And he and Charlie Adler hasn't missed an issue in over 100 some issues either. So it's neat that, you know, this creative team needs the planned breaks, and this other creative team can just keep chugging right along.
Well, you want to go that way, you look at Bendis and Bagley when they were doing Ultimate Spider-Man.
Exactly. Very similar, right?
And they were doing like 18 issues a year.
Oh, it was accelerated even, yeah.
Yeah. So there are a couple of artists that can just get pages out fast. There are others that need more time, and there's nothing right or wrong about that. There are a couple where it's like, man, take your time. I love your work. I'll wait for it. There are others, frankly, yeah, get it out a little faster, you know? But they've got to do what's right for them, and there's also, regardless of quality, not getting burnt out. It frustrates me for there to be a great run on a title, last an arc or two, year or so, and then the creators just feel they need to move on. It's like, but I'm liking this, keep doing this. But, you know, they're spending a lot of time on it. I get why they feel that need, too.
Yeah, and I don't, Charlie Adler doesn't have the collar to slow him down. He doesn't have to worry about the collaring. Fiona does her own collaring.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's, I'm not sure how long that takes, but that's, I'm sure it takes some time. And so that slows it down a little bit. I can see why this book takes a little longer than Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. To me, the important thing is they pace themselves. They know how long they need. They schedule accordingly.
And they put out complete story arcs before there's a hiatus.
Yes. I was reading MPH from Image, a new Mark Miller title, and in the letters page, it was one of those, well, we've got this issue so far in, I've decided to, you know, because I've got the money now from the movies and whatnot, to make sure I've got at least, you know, X amount of the thing in the can before we go out, and just kind of patting himself on the back and admitting that maybe he shouldn't be. But I appreciate that because, like, that first issue of MPH, I really enjoyed. I'd gotten that on a sampling basis. I've since pre-ordered issues 2 and 3 and such. But if it was one of those where it would be a crapshoot when the next issue would come out, that would cool my enthusiasm on it quite a bit. You know, there are a couple of titles out there. I loved the first issue. I've never seen the second even get solicited. What's the point of the first issue?
Did you like Amazing Spider-Man number 2?
Yeah, thought it was good.
Yeah, I did too. That was good.
They're doing some fun stuff, both the character, the supporting cast. A lot of what had been set up in Superior is starting to pay out. And it was good in Superior. It's not like it was all set up either, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But there was a certain part of that run where it's like the roller coaster part where you're clicking up to the peak of the track before it just cuts loose. And we haven't gotten to the point where everything cuts loose yet on Peter, but I'm sure it'll be a lengthy period of, you know, things to continue to deal with for quite some time.
Yeah, I enjoyed it as well. Big surprise for me was the Batman and Frankenstein issue from Peter Tomasi. I didn't know that character at all. I didn't read the series, mm-hmm. So I wasn't sure what to expect. But I thought, this is a really cool character. I really liked it.
I liked the character. The series he had, I didn't care for the art style. It was a bit more scribbly than I tend to like. But the character had also been used in a few other places, Justice League Dark and stuff like that.
The art's really good in this.
Yeah. No, this was solid art.
Doug Monkey, I think his name
is. Yeah. And the character also showed up in New 52 Futures End this week.
Ooh, okay.
So if you haven't read that, you've got that to look forward to also.
Nice.
So yeah, there was a lot of great stuff. Trying to think what else is really worth.
Daredevil was good.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Usually is, though.
Check that box. You know, of course, it's going to be. And it wouldn't be a weekly comic spotlight if I didn't say that Thor God of Thunder was really good, number 22.
Going back to Daredevil for a second. About half the things I've given 5 out of 5s to this year, written by Mark Waid. Thor, not written by Mark Waid. Just pointing that out.
Yeah.
Thor had some good stuff. And it's interesting how this is all kind of tying into the big picture stuff where the whole series started.
Yeah, I really like that, harkening back to the first big story arc. And, oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah, and it was really great. And we'll see what happens. But the stuff with Old King Thor and Galactus is just, it really steals the show, I think.
Yeah. Well, and I like it when they've got a creative team that's got a game plan that can really play out over the long term. They tell individually good stories, but it builds to a bigger thing because it's building on top of itself. Too many times we get just a really good story and then, okay, the end, let's start another story that's almost completely disconnected.
Did you kind of see what was coming in Original Sin number 2 for that final panel reveal? You saw that coming a while ago, right?
Yeah.
It was. I had heard that scuttlebutt on a lot of folks prognosticating about that, and that was their guess, and turned out to be pretty spot on.
And I'm glad they made that reveal early rather than later, because I think if people had to wait further into the series to find that out,
it would have been disappointing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
I continue to be a little disappointed by Original Sin with just how pedestrian the crime scene investigation, the police procedural part of it is going, and by the crazy shenanigans they're doing with the numbering. Because they're taking what's essentially 2 mini-series, a Hulk versus Iron Man one that's going to run through the 3.1, 2, 3, and 4 or whatever, and then a Thor and Loki one, which are going to be the 5.1, 2, and 3, and 0.4 or whatever.
I got lost when you were trying to explain that to Sam.
I got lost.
I couldn't follow it, and I'm just going to stick with the main Original Sin and not mess with anything else.
If it wasn't for these postcards that I get in my DCBS box, I wouldn't know how to read half these things. And I think there's a market to be had for somebody to collect all these damn checklists and stuff, of which Marvel has a ton. Kind of crazy. Only other thing I've got is it's once again preview spotlight time. Clips are due on June 7th. I've picked my picks. I've got them up on the forum, as I have links to solicitations. But I totally get waiting for the preview stuff. I always like getting that and flipping through that myself. My problem is I got to do my picks long before that comes out.
I keep saying I'm going to do it. I'm going to do online picks at some point, but I just didn't happen this time.
The other thing to talk about with the preview spotlight is if people have any thoughts on when clips should be due for the next go-round, because at this point it's looking to be probably July 5th, which is smack dab in the middle of a July 4th weekend.
Ooh.
So if anyone has some good ideas on scheduling on that, I'm open to suggestions. That's going to be just a crazy busy time for me, because it's getting into where I need to be getting ready for San Diego. Because that's only, 6-7 weeks away. So.
Okay, yeah, so we'll get the previews on the 25th of June?
Yes.
Okay. Well, in theory, it'll be released then, anyway.
Usually it's the last Wednesday of the month. But once again, this time it's June 7th for the clips. That's the morning of, so I can spend the day putting the episode together. And then there's the teleconference that night on Skype, if people want to talk. They just need to send me a chat on Skype. And there's instructions and stuff on the forum on that. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
Send those clips in.
Cool. Join us next week as we discuss Justice League Dark number 31 from DC, Thanos Annual number 1 from Marvel, and Cowl number 1 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.